given prominence to people who accept the kingdom. Because he says that if you accept that you're like the head of a household, which means that you have a greater importance than people.
I think he's saying too that there's new, given new teachings, you know, that yes, they still have the old, they still have the law and the prophets and all that, but there's something new in adding to that. Mm-hmm. Very important.
What I was thinking when I was reading this was that, you know, he says, have you understood all these things? You know, he's the teacher. He's trying to make sure they understood. And then he makes this conclusion. Therefore, every teacher of the law who's been instructed about the kingdom of heaven is like this owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. We have a disadvantage in this time frame. I was thinking about that. We don't store our wealth like down in the basement somewhere in a vault anymore. We have it in the bank. And when honestly, I barely open my bank statements. That's probably one of my faults. I really do not like going through my statements. But that's where if I was going to take an inventory or look at my earthly wealth that I had, that would be where it would be. You know, I would go to my bank statement and look at that. It's just a bunch of numbers. But we have a disadvantage. Back then, they probably felt a little bit more, they would understand that a little more because maybe they had bought some pearls, you know, and they put that in a, you know, maybe in a little lock box for a rainy day. You know, maybe they sold a field, you know, and the half of it they used for what they needed, and the other half they put in, bought some pearls and put it away for a rainy day. So maybe they go down there. Maybe they're pretty, probably. Maybe they like to look at them. You know, maybe they've got some treasure. And so they're going to take the old and the new. They're going to look at it. It's all the same. It's all valuable. And that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking maybe Jesus is trying to bring out. You know, he's saying, I'm a teacher here. I'm trying to make sure that you understand some of these things, even though maybe some of them might be old news for you. Maybe you all are familiar with the concept of a judgment day or you know, whatever. But these are valuable things that I'm bringing to the table, whether you've heard them before or whether they're new or old. And so as a teacher, it's kind of, I should have joy bringing this to you. It's important for me to bring even old news to you as well as new. It's important. That was kind of maybe what I got to thinking when I was reading through all this. I don't know, what any thoughts out there? Oh, yeah.
It's just like your grain being eaten by mice or rotten.
Yeah, it's definitely been kind of the truth of, you know, your storehouse being robbed by thieves and, you know, storing in your treasure in heaven. Definitely, you know, you learn that lesson whenever the stock market drops.
Well, I think Jesus has made it clear from the very beginning of his teaching that he's not there to do away with the Old Testament, because the Old Testament has truths and it has truth in it.
Right.
And so therefore he says, you may have learned some of the truths of the Old Testament, but just like in the Sermon on the Mount, which he's just given several chapters before, you know, he took statements from the law, and then he says, but that doesn't go far enough. This is what the kingdom of heaven is more like. So I think he's just saying that these parables complete some of those truths that are in the Old Testament, and it's like pulling out old valuables and placing them in new valuables.
Any other thoughts? The next parable we're going to look at is the parable of the lost sheep, and I wanted to turn to Luke. Because Luke, parable of the lost coin, follows that right after that. So in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 4, I'm going to read at the beginning of the chapter here. Now the tax collectors and quote-unquote sinners were all gathered around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep till he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders, goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. What is that saying to us? Have you ever lost something and then found it again? What do you mean?
In terms of value, how valuable that we are.
Mm-hmm. The other day, I mentioned this in our last class. The other day, I was playing golf with my friend Chris, and we got to the last hole, and I needed my 9-iron, and I reached in the bag, and it wasn't there. I saw the 6-iron, but I didn't see the 9-iron, and I was like, oh no, and I'm looking around, how in the world could I lose a whole club? And I immediately left. We stopped the game. He let people play through. I left all my clubs there, all 10 of them, in my bag, and went scouring the field looking for this club. You know, and I was this desperate search. You know, anxiety, you know, I'm going to have to replace this thing. I really don't want to. This is stupid. You know, I got to find it. I'm asking people, hey, did you see a 9-iron? Blah, 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 blah. All around. You know, it's embarrassing, but I mean, I lost all sense of personal, how people look at me kind of thing. You know, I'm just going out there, hey, did you see a 9-iron? Yeah, I'm an idiot. I lost it. Did you see it? You know, and I go all the way around and I didn't find it. So, you know, I played the last hole and the last thing we did find it, somebody had returned it to the clubhouse. But, you know, and I was just so happy. I mean, it didn't matter how bad my golf score was, you know. I mean, it made my day, you know, and I left everything there to go find it. And that's, I think the point of this, you know, is that God really, really, really wants us. We're really valuable to Him, and, you know, He's going to seek after us. Any thoughts?
Been there, done that.
Been there, done that.
I've got a better story.
Okay, let's hear it.
When my niece was 2, she wandered off down the ridge from our house in East Tennessee. And I had gone to a friend's house. I was in high school. And she was gone, swallowed up. Desperation, and we called the police, and I don't know what all you call. And it started to get dark, and I know they brought the blood hounds out, and I mean, he do everything possible. And they followed her scent, except my brother, she had just gone to the bathroom and dropped her underwear, you know, she was 2. He picked her underwear out, put it in her back pocket, and gone back out and down the bridge. Bloodhound followed him instead of her. So then it started to rain, and then it started to get dark. So by then the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, everybody was there, and so they formed a chain down, just trying to comb the ridge, and finally found her about 4 hours later, thankfully. But it's hard to, unless you've experienced a lost 9-iron, but a lost
Right. There is no cost that is too much to find that lost, especially a lost child. And I think that's more analogous to how God is for us. Is, you know, I mean, he even sent his own son to die. You know, and so that's something that I think if we really take that to home in our life, we're going to be a lot more thankful in our life about, you know, I've been bought with a price. You know, I'm valuable here. I'm worthwhile. There's hope for me. I can, and you're going to come out to be a lot more thankful, a lot more vigilant in your walk.
I think what Becky's talking about is probably closer to what Jesus, the type of emotion that Jesus was relaying to the crowd, because if you were a shepherd in that crowd listening to Jesus in these parables, shepherds back then were kind of different from just your someone who raises cattle or something like that, because they would count the sheep every day. And not only would they count the sheep, but they got to know the sheep so well that they knew their individual personality differences. And they actually gave them names. And so these really were more like children than they were just a valuable object or something like that. They did not look at the sheep necessarily as just for the value of the wool or the value of the meat that they slaughtered. They looked at them almost like friends or like family. So this would really speak to those shepherds when he says that your father loves you so much that he'd be willing to leave the others in a safe place, you know, maybe with the dogs taking care of them, and go and find this one sheep, because he has value on it more than just monetary value, but he has value because he has a personal relationship with his sheep.
Right.
You know, the end of that story is when Jesus brings that one sinner home, that there is more rejoicing in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think about when Melissa was physically brought to us, the joy was just overwhelming. And that was for a person who's physically lost, and this is for someone who's spiritually lost, and how much sometimes
relate to that. Mm-hmm.
But it is so much more when
you're
spiritually lost
than
joy
that we should be experiencing. Yeah, I mean, I think that whole thing of, you know, a soul being lost in, you know, the fires of hell, I mean, you just don't want to go there. You know, you don't want to think about it, and a lot of times we don't really think about it and what the implications are, you know, and how bad that would be. I mean, I can't hold my hand on a stove for but a fraction of a second, you know, and it hurts for a long time afterwards, you know, and just to be, it's described like fire and hell. I mean, we don't know, it's described a lot like that, so, you know, I assume that it is, but, you know, in any case, you don't want to go there, and that rejoicing of getting that soul out of that predicament is, you know, you can see why that there would be that. Again, the next parable that kind of parallels that is the parable of the lost coin. And one thing, I went through the some of these parables, like I a lot of these, I mean, I was going through this list of parables, and I don't know if you can see my pencil marks, but I would say, just eyeballing it, about 80% of these parables are directly related to the kingdom of heaven, or they are very, very close to being directly related to the kingdom of heaven. You know, like, and we could say that this, you know, is about the kingdom of heaven, you know, the lost coin. It says, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. First of all, notice this woman, she, in the same way with the lost sheep, she went and told her neighbors and friends and family, hey, I found my coin. So evidently she must have went and told them she had lost it. I mean, they knew. I mean, you could probably assume that. So you can see how much, you know, devastation there is in losing this. And you remember in that video I showed, if you guys were here, where they showed one of those floors in Palestine, how it looked. I mean, I've seen cobblestone, like in some of these cities in Europe, that was a lot more level and better than what was on the floor in this house. I mean, we're talking, you know, levels, you know, about maybe an inch or two difference, you know, and gaps all in the floor. And, you know, you could see how, you know, difficult it would be to kind of go through there with a lamp and look for this lost coin that might have fallen down in the crack somewhere in this, you know, stone floor. So again, you know, it just basically parallels what we talked about in Lost Sheep. The next parable I want to talk about is Parable of the Workers. That's in chapter 20 of Matthew. It's true. I mean, you know, it would definitely be a witness to people that are outside, you know, because they'd see, hey, there's something there. There's something attractive there, you know. Not, you know, you're not just having to keep a bunch of rules and not do a bunch of stuff, you know. This parable of the workers. I'm going to read this, chapter 20, starting in verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. So he told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. And he asked them, why have you been standing here all day doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last one hired and going to the first. The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more, but each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them, friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? And then he says, so, the last will be first, and the first will be last. What does this make you think about when you heard this?
Often read this parable, and I I really firmly in my own mind think that he was directing this to the apostles as much as anybody. Because if you go back to chapter 19, Peter has said, Lord, we've left everything for you. And we're always saying, coming to him and saying, who's going to be first in the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're just always trying to dwell on our own accomplishments. So I've done this and I've done that. And I think that's what this parable is addressing.
Jesus kind of addresses something analogous to this in Luke 17, verse 7, where he says, suppose one of you had a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Would he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now and sit down and eat? Would he not rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready and wait on me while I eat and drink? After that, you may eat and drink. Would he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you have done everything that you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants, we have only done our duty. A lot of times, I think it's easy for a Christian who to fall into this trap, who starts filling out this mental checklist of things that they're doing. I did this, I did that, I do this, I do that. To develop this sense of pride about themselves, you know, that they are better than other people who don't do that checklist or who don't. And it's a very unconscious thing that can slip up on you. And it's, you know, it's wrong, and, you know, it's something to keep in mind to always approach it through with that humility that I've only done what I was told to do, and that's, you know, and I'm going to get paid my denarius. Just like the person who, the murderer who was, you know, preached the gospel to in jail right before his death sentence and you know, came to know Christ and was baptized. You know, he gets the same denarius that you did. You know, and that doesn't mean, you know, to sit back on your haunches and not do anything, of course. But it's that the humility that you should have when you approach this is, you know, I'm doing what is my duty. Any thoughts? Again, something that's kind of parallel this, I saw in Luke 18, 10. Starting in 9, it says, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you, this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who humbles himself will be exalted, and he who humbles himself, I think I read that wrong, he who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So again, we have that almost kind of parallel to the first shall be last, the last shall be first. I think my thoughts on this was the basic point of that parable of the workers, you know, is humility. There's an underlying truth there. You know, you're just doing what you were hired to do.
I think, again, there's a lot of what Jesus is talking about is a lot of the values that God places upon people coming to him and receiving him into their hearts. I mean, he's not going to think any more about Peter or Paul than he is about me of receiving the kingdom. And that's good news to me. I don't know how Peter and Paul are going to think about that, but that's good news to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the thing that's obviously absent from this parable, which has been present in the others, is the rejoicing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the same tone of this had been done with the lost sheep, you'd have gotten back to the flock, and all the flock would have been grown.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yeah.
So I think that, and I think it's interesting that at the end of chapter 19, and also at the end of this parable, he talks about the last in person. So I think this is just obviously something that he's saying that God is not going to be more rejoicing about people that we would consider to be people of prominence rather than us who are more lowly. He's not going to rejoice more over elders than he is over people who do have no position of authority in the church.
I think that parable of the lost son, where you've got this man who has a household, and his son goes out and gets, you know, goes off and astray for a while, and then he comes back. You know, he welcomes him back into his household again. You know, there's this. It is God's. I think heaven. When they remember. I don't know if you remember if you were there when we showed the video of where they showed that Jewish household where they. They would build on to their father's house. They would have a central courtyard. And the father would have his house. And then when he had a couple sons, they would build their houses connected up to that complex. And it was all very close-knit thing. And that's the way Jesus described it. He says, I'm going to my father's house to prepare a place for you. And we're, you know, described as the bride of Christ. You know, and if you remember from that video where, you know, that's what the bridegroom would say to his bride-to-be. He would say, I'm going to my father's house to prepare a place for you. When I return, I'll take you with me. You know, he would go and build onto his father's house and then come get his bride later. And so you can understand kind of in a way how, you know, if we're part of his household, his family, why God would be that way about us, because we're his children. That story, you know, that you told about the lost child is, you know, a really good analogy. You know, I think we're back in the fold, we're there, you know, so I think it's, you know, just shows how much he loves us.
I think just in simple terms, Joel, what they're saying here is if you've been a Christian for 30 years, somebody's been a Christian for a day, if Christ returns, the rewards are going to be the same.
Right.
And we both need to rejoice in that reward and not expect. If you've been working for Christ for 30 years, there's not going to be anything more. And if you agree, the kingdom of heaven is what was your going to be your salvation. So,
I mean,
that person that's been working for one day, or you've been working for 30 years, we're both going to have the same reward. And that's.
I don't know if this makes any sense, but, you know, as you were talking about giving him trying to communicate with the disciples came from all walks of life and weren't the first priests or scribes, and now they are, at this point, the last priests and scribes, so he may be saying that they would go before.
Possible, yeah. You know, and I mean, it's, I don't know, to me it just shows that whole attitude where Jesus, where the landowner said, didn't you agree to work for a denarius? You know, and if out of my love and mercy, you know, and goodwill, I want to give this other worker that came an hour before sunset a denarius too, isn't that my right? So I think it's, more.
You know, and I mean, if we don't understand that God is giving us something that we don't deserve, whether we've been working 30 years in the church or not, we're still unworthy slaves. We still are completely undeserving of salvation that He's giving us just out of His grace.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And if you keep that in mind, then it's possible to look around without judging other people, other Christians, and say, well, I don't know what that person's doing. Here, yeah.
know, if you had been a landowner listening or heard this parable, you would probably thought that this other guy was an idiot. Because, I mean, because what man would go out and hire workers and then at the very last hour hire a bunch of more workers and give them the same wage that they'd given the guys that had worked all day? I mean, they would have said, that's bad business.
Yeah.
In the first place. But again, I think the point being that God values all of us. And it's more, I guess the lost sheep or the lost coin is more, gives us more of the real mindset of God as far as we're concerned. That is that He wants us at all costs. And He's willing to give us at all costs. And it's not something that you can earn, but it's something that He gives to you.
The last parable I wanted to get to was the parable of the unmerciful servant back in Matthew chapter 18.
I just want to add one other thing to it. I agree that regardless of when we become a Christian or what we accomplish, we're all going to enter the kingdom of heaven. We're all going to be going to heaven. I just wonder, though, that last day when we're facing Jesus and we're giving an account of our life, you know, I just wonder what
you know, it's hard to say, you know, God's, like I tell a lot of people, God's the ultimate judge, you know,
right.
And,
well, I don't think it's a matter of not being able to get into heaven or anything, but I do think that we might be feeling some remorse. I'm going to feel some remorse if God gave me a talent or two and I used it purely for selfish
reasons. Right.
At that point, there's nothing else I can do, but on really looking back. But anyway, I don't know if there's an answer.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I mean, the guy in that parable, I think he was, wasn't he punished? The guy that didn't do well with his talent, and they took it away from him, and Jesus makes the point, those that will have, they'll be given more, and those that have little, even what they have will be taken away from them. And it might be, you know, a sense of, you know, what'd you do with your life? You know, and, you know, if I just basically, I knew what I needed to do and I didn't do it all my life, you know, then there's, God's going to make that judgment call, you know. And I think there again, with the parable of the fish, you know, it's God that's going to be taking the fish and He's going to look at it and He's going to, you know, examine that fish and find out whether, you know, it's good or not. And I think really it's up to us to examine our own heart, you know, and realize that we do have God's mercy, you know. I mean, and, but at the same time, you know, we need to have that humility, you know, we're only doing what we're told to do, you know, what we agreed to do, what, you know, it's our duty, you know, in our walk.
I think that we need to be really careful that our salvation is not based on grace, but then we get to heaven, suddenly our entrance is based on our works.
No, and it's not.
That's Jesus' blood is going to cover you at the end of their day.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I buried my talent, I'm so sorry, you know. But I think that parable applies to your life now, of course, in your walk now with God, but when you stand before God, it's the blood of Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not doubting that at all.
Right.
I mean, there's no works we can do good enough. I agree with that. And I'm just wondering, I don't know, carrying an account that people die and they come back and stuff, and they kind of, I have no idea if it's reality or, you know, it's just hallucination, you know. It's some sort of tape recorder going back to your life in front of this big light that's supposed to be Jesus. And then we're supposed to be, you know,
you know, it's kind of
back on our life right before God, you know.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, you're saved, but it doesn't matter how you live.
Right.
But I am saying it's the blood of Jesus.
Right.
And here's the thing that I think is good to keep in mind. I like to think of, you know, several places they in the kingdom of God or the walk as a Christian is described as like a warrior, you know, the armor of God. And if you're in fighting a battle, if you're not going forward and defeating defeating that enemy, then you're losing. You're going backwards. And as a Christian, you know, when I, if I, you know, don't keep trying and don't keep persevering in my walk, then, you know, I start kind of sinking back. And then what happens is it's a gradual effect because Satan, he's pushing you. It's a battle. So he is, if you are backtracking and retreating, he's taking ground. And eventually what can happen is you can be lost. I mean, you can fall away. I mean, it's happened to a lot of people. They sit back and they don't, you know, and it's a gradual process. And eventually they don't, it's meaningless to them, you know. And over their course of their lifetime, maybe they're lost. You know, that doesn't mean that they can turn back around and come back. But, you know, I think, I don't know, that's the way I look at it. I, you know, any food for thought out there. Works, right. Right.
But it does make a difference now.
I mean, it's easy to, it's just, I don't know, I've seen that in my life. Let's just put it that way. I've seen when I have backtracked, then, and I quit working on going forward, then all of a sudden I start backtracking.
But I think even if you, I guess then if you even look at the parable of the talents, the one who took five and gained five, and the one who had only two and gained two, the one who obviously had five and made five more was way ahead of the one that had two and made two more. But the language is the very same of what the master says to him afterwards.
Well done.
He says, well done, enter into joy, because I will make you commander over many. And the language to the one that did nothing is very clear too. That is, departing. So I think all that Jesus is saying is that there are going to be no degrees of reward if you're acceptable to God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about punishment. There's going to be no degrees of reward.
And one thing I've thought about is the efforts that you're making in your life, if you're working, if there's somebody in your life that you know that you're trying to work on, you know, talking to, influence, that it's God that gives the increase. And prayer, through prayer, and knowing, hey, you know, it's not me that has to do this, it's God that's going to do it and going to act on them, you know, then you can feel a lot more confident about, you know, what you're trying to do. Thanks.